All right. I want to thank all of our speakers for kind of giving us a background on their facilities and their operations a little bit. And now we're going to have them all three kind of come up here and sit at our head table here, I guess, and kind of just have a little bit of a panel discussion. Any questions you all have, you know, about whether it be questions of something your market operator back doing versus these guys' operations, feel free to shoot some answers at them. We've got some very knowledgeable people in the industry, and like Mark said, it's the check that matters in the end. So go ahead and feel free to use your questions. It's good if you have a question for close to a mic, feel free to jump and grab the mic so we can make sure we hear y'all. Not all at once. Okay.
Kind of question. What kind of a premium price are you getting for an Asian source verified test? And secondly, what kind of a premium do you get for tests that have been asked to be part of that system? Well, thank you.
Was that before the corn turn or after? Generally, you can see on those agent sources in the process cabs, as long as you can move that information along, you've got to remember, for a packer to utilize that, you have to be able to move that information along, either hard copy or they'd rather see it electronically. I would say safely, I would say probably $5 or $6 a hundred. You know, just to be safe, be conservative. You know, I tell you what my yearlings brought last June, but it's just to make everybody here sick. You know, and on a, like, we do agent source cattle, we also do source only, where they don't want to mess with, you know, having an audit to go through their system to check all that. And them cattle will probably usually be $2 to $5. But, you know, I tell you one thing, I don't care how good a genetics you have. If it's got a near tag, it's aged and sourced and all the bells and whistles. If you don't have health, you have this. A dead calf won't bring you nothing. If you have to, and the guys from Pfizer probably this better than I, if you have to doctor one time in the feed yard, it'll cut his grade back quite a bit. Did that answer everything, sir?
It cost me $14 every time I vaccinated
cows. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Remember, the first time you do it's for your protection. And I'll just tell you something, and this is just from our location, and think about this, how you sell your cattle and where you sell your cattle, you have to have somebody that drives that for you. You know, the guy that I work for, Jackie Moore, he is totally producer-driven, and sometimes if you have to take ownership of some of them cattle to make people understand in your crowd what you're doing, we do that. But you have to have somebody that drives that market for you. It's not going to drive itself. Them order buyers that come, they have orders, and they're expected to buy them at a certain price. You know, you have to step up there, and because you can't go around and tell everybody about all these programs, do all the meetings like we all do. You know, it's kind of like being a preacher. You can't preach the gospel unless you get somebody saved every once in a while. So that day that sale comes, ever who's running that barn has to be the person in control. And that's probably where we get along better than anyone. All right, Jackson,
next. Right here.
Mark, another question for you. On one of your slides, you had health and nutrition programs.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your nutrition requirements.
You know, I'm really fortunate to work with several companies. MFA Health Track is, we share a booth with them here. They're probably one of my biggest partners on the cattle they get me. You know, nutrition is just like the health, it's everything. You know, some of these cattle just went out west. Stop by our booth at 1235. You'll see some cattle that was in a feed yard in Kansas that went through that last blizzard. The ice on them is 1.5 inches thick. He had one dead and treated one calf. I mean, nutrition and health go hand in hand. You know what I'm saying? It's just so important. And, you know, the main thing is you have to understand how a vaccination and a nutritional program is offset by the cost. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the stuff you do at home makes that calf live better, makes him grow better. He has a better game-wise with you. He might not bring any more than the calf that's sold at the regular sale, but you're selling a couple hundred extra pounds, and you're selling a lot of healthier calf. You know, until you've been on the western edge of this deal and you unload a load of them cattle that come off there and they start falling apart on you, you'll appreciate somebody that does a preconditioning sale. Did that answer that?
I have a cow herd that's predominantly Angus with some Plymouth Bottle Herpers way back. About 1 out of 10 throws a great calf. Source of Angus source verified, all the health, everything, sell them at a source verified sale. Graze, $5, $6, same genetics, same everything. Only difference is the push.
I understand. And you want me to tell you what they say about them grays? The guys that buy ours say they don't grade as well. But we did a research at our little, from our, we live in a little bitty small town, and a lot of guys sent, everybody sent five calves to a feed yard in Iowa. They did this one, and the ones that graded the best were the gray ones. But the guys that are buying them from you say that, you know, the rat tails or the gray or the slick tails say they don't grade as well. But, you know, I ain't got enough, you know, to feed one of them to find out. But, you know, my cows are just like yours. I'm a Simmental Angus breeder, you know. But it happens. And it's just, you know, you're going to have to grant the Angus people, they've done a great job marketing. You know, the next time you go with your wife to the grocery store, go to the magazine rack, open up Good Housekeeping, or magazine that she reads, and Angus has an ad in there. They have done a great job. But that gray calf, I understand. I get yelled at every week. Oh, I don't know what you can do about it. What you need to do, you need to find out what cow that calf's coming out of and get rid of her. Then that way you won't be mad at yourself next year. You know what I'm saying? That's the way you can do it. Or either keep that calf, fatten it up, get it weighing 1,200 pounds, butcher it, and give it to the church. That way you won't be mad at yourself.
In the back.
Why do you think corn ethanol is going to impact your business?
We're in the area where that's going to impact quite a little. In fact, we've had discussions about it internally with some of our producers, and we think it could have a real positive impact in our trade area because of the byproduct feeds. There is discussion. There's the other side of the coin that says it's going to keep the corn price driven up, but we think that byproduct has got some real opportunities, and I don't think we've tipped the iceberg on how we can handle those byproducts. I think there'll be more innovations along the line that will enhance livestock feeding with it.
You know, I think on a lot of these feed yards, a lot of them already went to feeding DDG. But the problem is, I think they're still searching for an enzyme that they can put in there that'll break that down for the animal to use it better, to utilize it better. Because, you know, I was talking to Tom Brinks at her place last week, and he said there's nothing one that'll fatten one like number two corn. So, but you know, they're still, you can still feed some of that corn. It's awfully high, but I mean, I think it is coming. But now a lot of feed yards, now they're closer to the corn than you take your guys in, you know, Amarillo and Dodge and places like that. Now they are building a place, I believe, in Amarillo or out by there, so that'll probably help some. But I was talking to some nutritionists the other night, and they're talking about some kind of enzyme that breaks that down a little bit, so it makes the animal utilize a little bit more, especially in hogs and in cattle both.
More questions?
You're missing too many guys.
Yeah.
Oh,
I got
another one.
Sure.
The crossbreeding. And what do you see in the future that the feedlot, the calves and the feedlot are really going to want and pay more for? I mean, you know, we're talking about doing all these source verified but what kind of calves are going to pay for? You consider a cost?
You're raising the right kind. You're raising the right kind. That's what they told me last. They feed 850,000 head. They want a Continental English Cross. You know, that's just what they want. You know. I mean, if you're doing a Simmental Angus cross there, I mean, you've got the calf they're looking for. Oh, but you're headed that way. In the past, you're worried about them gray ones, aren't you? But I mean, you know, I run a straight Angus cow, breed them a straight Simmental with Angus the first time, and then I take those F1s and breed them back straight Angus and take that F1, and I've got, you know, a pretty good thing going there. But that seems to be the guys I talk to, the guys that we deal with, that's what they're looking for. You know, ever how that fits into your deal. They talked about that this morning in the Alliance. Patsy talked about that from up at, she's at McCook at the Heartland Development Center. I'd probably try to run her down here at this deal. I wouldn't want to, a lot of guys using those composites, you know. So, you know, I'm an F1 kind of guy. You know, I do think we have these cattle too straight bred. And that's what a lot of people are telling us. You know, I'm just like you guys. I'm at ground zero. I'm in Southwest Missouri. I'm a straight hillbilly. You know, I got three kids, four grandkids, and I'm just trying to make them cows work. That's what I'm trying to do. But, you know, I'm thinking this hybrid vigor, this crossbreeding, and when I sell those calves, I don't have a lot of trouble selling them. I mean, you know, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but that's what works in my country because I do have a lot of fescue.
Any of you have a market outlook, price, down the road that they care to share with us?
You bet. I got an opinion on everything. I'm just that way. I'm the most optimistic guy you'll ever meet. I really think as we, right now, cost of gain's killing us, and it's killing you guys too. When we get down to a little bit of grass here in the spring, you'll probably see some of these cattle, I think, make a little bit of money. It looks like they're in June, you know, June long here, that board's looking pretty good. I think these cattle probably start making, I think if you had some 6-weight cattle bought right now, you know, you should buy them in, you know, low to mid 90s. I think you could sell them cattle up or towards June for 80 and back them up 10. They probably make you some money. You know, in my country, we've had come through some terrible ice storms, a pretty rough winter. They're selling lots of cows. Hay's getting pretty short. I don't think there's a massive amount of cattle out there. We just had the big blizzards in Colorado and western Kansas. You know, there's a lot of feed yard cattle that's being killed. There's a lot of cows that'll never survive out there. You know, it's like I told that Trent Luce last night. You know, them big ranches out west, the movie stars are buying them, or the high income people, they're never going to run cows on them. You know, as the population grows every day, the cow herd shrinks every day. And for you people in here, this is the greatest time in your life to be in the cow business. You just got to have a product that they're looking for and try to do a better job managing it. I think we're in pretty good shape, but I'm pretty optimistic. You know, we've had a good 2 or 3 year run here. Anybody that don't believe that, raise your hand. I mean, we made a ton of money on these cattle, so let's remember that. And we knew this was coming. We didn't know it was going to be corn, low-quality hay, or what, but we knew something was going to happen. It always does. We're the shortest people in the world to forget. Somebody, he liked that. But it is the truth. But, you know, I mean, you know, them cattle were making $150, $200, $300, $400 a head, some of them feed yard cattle. These cow-calf producers, they were ringing a bell, you know. So we've had it pretty good. We're just kind of on a tight squeeze right here, but I think the inventory could be, and maybe you ever see what the guys at CattleFX say about the inventory on the cow-calf, the feed yard, and everything. I think we're in a pretty good position, and I feel good about it.
Any more questions? Yeah.
What percentage of the cattle coming through there would be, I guess I call them trader cattle, that are coming back through that have not been owned, that just been lost the previous week from another side? How do you handle those?
We try to... Well, I tell you, you know, the guys that work there have been there long enough. Anybody checks one in, I mean, we know who they are. I'm not saying that we don't get some trading cattle, but I'm sure we do. I would say on a week that we have, let's just pick last Monday, we had right at 6,600 head. There might have been 50. You know, it's not very hard to tell. I mean, we got so many cows in our area, I have a hard enough job of taking care of the good people. But I can, you know, if we see a set of traders come through, we know the set-in price won't be near as good as the farm raised cattle. You know what I'm saying? I don't really owe that guy anything. You know, if he wants to trade on, that's his business. You know what I'm saying? I'm not for the cow-calf guy. I mean, he's my man. Because here's what happens to you. You run a set of the cattle through, one of your big corporate buyers gets them, dumps them on a load of cattle that he's already bought, then come through some other good producers that day. They get out to western Kansas or Amarillo or up in Nebraska, and them cattle are getting sick. They get all the good ones sick. Then that guy's calling us, and I tell you what you better do. You better be able to write him a check, because he is not going to be happy with it. So you can't jeopardize, you know, you can't jeopardize the deal. It's just not worth it, because, I mean, those big corporates that come in there, they'll get, a lot of those guys will get from 10 to 30 loads a day. So you cannot jeopardize putting what I would call trade cattle on some of them deals. It's just too risky, because they will hold your feet to the fire, because these cattle are costing quite a bit. Did that answer your question?
What about, Mark, could you explain how you have your co-mingled sales, the land conditions, and the money, and the price, and what about combined with direct auction?
We'll get right back to you. How we do the coal mill thing, we do that on Sunday. We sort them, you know, for the ones they want to coal mingle. We weigh them right then. Okay, that weight is captured. We put a tag in his ear so we can trace him, because we're going to blend them all together. After, when he's weighed, all that process is put into a computer, and all that is stored until we sell them. When we sell them on the ring weights. So them cattle are putting feed and water pins, they might pick up a little bit of weight during the night, you know. And then your percentage is adjusted out of that total weight on how much your calf weighed when you weighed him in the back. It took us a little while to get that through the PNS. Believe me, they came down, checked it really good, and finally approved it. You know, when we do it on the value-added sales, like for MFA, we might commingle 3,000 of theirs. A lot of them cattle will pick up 2 to 3% of their body weight. Because that sales on Thursday, we'll do that on Tuesday. Them cattle will pick up a lot of weight. But on the weekly sale, they're weighed when they're off the truck. They're commingled, put them in feed and water pens, and then whatever the scale weight is, that's how they get paid. And that percentage is figured to the computer. Did that answer your question? Okay. Let's go right here.
Question.
Question
in the front.
What about the export market? Japan and Korea, are they going to be willing to buy our product again? Or what's the hold up there? Don't seem like it makes much sense to anybody. Anybody got any feed on that? Any feedback on this?
I think the biggest thing with the Japan thing is just politics. You know what I mean? They're just anything they can nitpick along to keep us from going in there. But, you know, we're exporting this meat to other places, Korea, Mexico, and different places. You know, the one thing about, you know, Japan wants that 20-month and younger, and that's all they're going to take. I don't think they're going to take anything above that. You know, so the way I look at things, no matter what kind of product I'm selling, whether it's a used feed truck or a tractor or my cattle, I'm going to do everything I can to get ever much I can. It's like owning house insurance. When I pull down that driveway at night and that house is burning, I'm going to thank God I got that insurance. It's the same way I do my cattle. I'll do all the bells and whistles, and the day I sell them, if that's all Jack can get for them, I'm going to be happy with that. But if the right guys are sitting in the stands and you got the right driver behind the microphone, you might get that $5 or $10. You know, why take a chance with a product you've worked almost 12 months to get? Why just fluff him off, say, oh, I'm not going to cut him or worry about him. I'm just going to sort with you. You know, the people that do that, I don't feel as dedicated to those people. I'll get them as much as I can if they bring me a set of them five-way bulls. But for somebody that's done all the work, put the tags in their ear, I feel like I owe them something because they have done all the work. And some days you can't get it. You know, we've been backed up against the back of that door, and when that board goes down limit 10 minutes before the sale starts and you catch 18 or 20 loads of them, you better have a pretty good partner on the other end. But you can't weaken because you went around and told everybody, just like this man right here, to do that. So what you do is you catch them, and, you know, you call you a feed yard and you look for a partner. That's just how it works. You know, that's what makes Joplin successful, is we're willing to step out front and make sure it works for the producer. And I think that's just part of the customer service. If you're not getting that where you're selling, you might need to look at a different alternative. And I'm probably too far away from most of you folks. But I think the Japan thing came back, kind of got off question there a little bit, but it all comes together on that. You know, look at Walmart. They're the hugest grocery chain in the world. Whether you like them or you like McDonald's and all them people, it doesn't matter what we like. They're selling a product that we produce. So we've got to kind of do it like they like it. If you don't want to do all that, you have to be ready to take what you get. Wouldn't you think so, Jennifer?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. She says, sorry. Sorry for
me. I thought I talked a lot, so I met Mark.
I'll give 2 cents on that question. My personal opinion is that Japan, maybe the export to Japan, the QSA programs and those things may be required by foreign countries. My personal opinion is that we will see the domestic market follow that lead, and our consumers will demand at some point in time that there's a passport or a record on those cattle as they move through the system. I think it will be expected, and we have to be prepared for it.
What we're telling all of our producers is just to go ahead, and maybe everybody in this room does keep your birth dates down and your ages and things like that, but a lot of my producers don't, or they just have a very sketchy way of doing that. That's their first step in getting their cattle ready. If we talk about preparing them at home, is keeping those records, and we've got, you know, training groups and calendars we give them to tell them how, so that if they do choose to participate in one of those marketing programs, that they're able to do that.
Mark, on that question, on how that, what all do they measure ultrasound?
No. Actually, we got that thing from the USDA. It's just a kitchen. It's kitchen a hip height. It's not rocket science. Believe me, you know, we used to have an imaging thing that we got from some guys in Nebraska. You know, they charged us for doing that, and Jack got to thinking, and I'll tell you a quick story if we got just a minute. He said when he was a kid, every Sunday morning before they went to church, his dad would lock up all the hogs in the pen. He'd take some 2x4s and build a little hole out there by the gate where they could go out. When they come back, the hogs they were going to sell the next day were already sorted, because all the rest of them got out that hole. So that's when we decided we just came up with a grade system like we had. I mean, it's not, you know, it's just like when they grade them, they do it by eye probably. You know, you're just catching, you're kind of getting the ones and twos and the threes and fours and just kind of getting, you're just kind of trying to help them out a little bit. It just catches the hip heights is all it does.
Is that program developed up in Nebraska? Is that still in use?
Yeah, I think it is. It just costs too much to operate it. And then what cost was, and actually, if you want to know the truth, that thing that makes all that work came out of a quarry. You know, you mean by a rock quarry where they're putting rock all different directions? That's what makes that thing work. Jack and Steve are partners in a rock quarry, and the guy that did that thought that. You see what I'm saying? It's just something that sorts things, no matter whether it's cattle or rocks or anything. You know, it's something because it opens the gates and tells them where all to go. But it's just a hip height. It's what it is. That's why I have my own QSA program, because I can control it. But now Angus Source sells a lot in there, and there's several breed associations that get those. But what they have to remember, if they're going to sell at my location, they got to be able to dump me all that information. I got to have that tag database. I got to have all the help so I can move it on to the feed yard, which in turn moves it to the packer. You know, I really wish why that was, they were kind of been a national something to kind of a general standard. Then that way we got, so we're going so many different directions. You know, that's why in my area that I've kind of set up what I've set up, it gives us a little bit better control of it. Probably the main one I sell is the Angus Source, but they're good to work with and they can send me the information pretty easy. as long as you're doing something. That's how I am, you know. Just do something to try to improve on what you do.
And I just, to our place, it's just a numbers game. We do the Angus source component, but we're trying to not, you know, go in 50 different directions. We've got to worry about trucking. We're a long way from the feed yard, so we don't see as much of the breed specific in our areas as probably Mark does, and I think mostly it's numbers. You know, if you got, I mean, have a guy, he makes wants to do the Hereford, but there's nobody. There is some in southeast, south middle Tennessee that does a Hereford one, but not a lot in our area.
On the ag program, do you provide them
ag? Yes. No, we distribute our own tags for ours.
Well, now on the job system, I know that's
Are you asking me if I sell those tags?
Yeah, I mean, where is exclusive information?
We do, yeah. I've set mine up where I do the work for the producer. You know, if he wants to do my QSA program, I'll send a guy to do the first. He'll fill out the forms. We'll send it in, get him approved. Then we'll go out and do the audit. Then he'll request the tags, and I'll sell them to him. I had to make it because I have so many small producers. I have one guy dedicated to that at work. Troy Watson, that's what he does. He handles every bit of that information for our QSA program. Because, you know, not everybody can buy a laptop. Not everybody has a reader. You don't need any of that if you're working in the right system. Because we handle all that tag allocation to a web base. It's not that hard. You know, I understand we're a little bit bigger sale facility than some of the others, but you can work through some of that stuff. You know, but yeah, that tag, the USA makes us control that.
What you just asked me?
Oh, well, see, I'll have all that pre-done. I require all that information being 10 days before the sale. And then we load it all in there. Then when that calf sells, when I type in that seller ID number, it flashes everything about their cattle on a screen. It tells us their QSA approved, the oldest calf in the group, the weaning date, and the program they're on. I do quite a bit for producers. You know, I'm not saying I get return for it all, but the way we look at it, we get more cattle, so that helps us make a little bit more money. But somebody has to step out front and do a lot of this stuff. And it might not happen next year or the year after, but sometime it's going to happen.
Yeah, Mark goes out usually. Mark goes out and videos them on the farm, and like I said, as needed. So sometimes the guy may just call the Friday before the Monday of our Wednesday sale. We fax that out. We gather it. It's called a video, although someone laughed at me. We do show the video in the ring, but we've been doing this since whatever I said, 1984. I think I've actually been asked for one video from a buyer. Basically, they're going on a fax description. We've got a fax mailing list of all of our buyers, and on Tuesday before a sale, we put a description of each lot, actually written down, grade, estimated weight, color, feeding conditions, health program, anything else that we know about them, what their weighing conditions are going to be. Then they're sold at 4 o'clock. Anybody that wants to call in that may not be at our regular sale, they'll call in on a conference call, and we'll sell them there at 4. And then usually a standard for us is pick up within 10 days, and the buyer and the seller will agree on a date and time on a non-sale day that they'll either weigh them usually at our place, or for some that are further away from us, there may be a designated place that we weigh them that's not at the market. So yeah, they stay at the farm.
So you estimate the
weight. Yes, and this, so with the slides.
Yeah,
no.
They
either come to my market to be weighed or to some other facility to be weighed. Occasionally we'll weigh on a truck or something like that.
How does that price compare with
Usually favorably. I can't give you an exact amount, but if a lot of times we wouldn't have anything to compare on that particular day. In other words, if we're selling 7-weight Holsteins or, you know, 4 loads or 5 loads, we might not have that many 7-weight Holsteins to compare them to that same Wednesday, but usually it compares very favorably. It compares with the internet sales from the same week. It's worked real well for a lot of our producers. No, commission's a little different. Actually, it's a little cheaper because it's a little. We don't have to do as much for us. Now, different people, I'm sure, different ways. I don't know about anybody else's. Tractor trailer load. That's what we pretty much. We don't usually deal. We may split a load steers and heifers if a guy really wants to and has them, but basically it's tractor trailer loads.
Any final questions? If not, we'll look towards wrapping up. Kind of go through and give all of our speakers a 2-minute opportunity to kind of put a few closing thoughts together and any final thoughts they have for the day.
One of the thoughts that I was just sitting here thinking about and reasons for auction markets wherever you are in the country to be utilized is think about how you get payment too. Payment is bonded and all of the auction facilities, you know your money's going to be good. If somebody stiffs the auction barn, you still get paid. And I think that's one of the biggest advantages that you have when you patronize an auction facility, whether it's a co-op or a privately owned, you have that advantage of the money being there when it's supposed to be there. The auction operators have become more and more technologically advanced over the years to aid you in your production, in your sale, and the marketing of your livestock. And one of the challenges that has to occur in the industry is that we have to be able to put together and maintain a reputation of each of the individuals that we're handling their livestock for, so that you always have buyers in those seats or buyers that you can send those cattle to. And that's a big plus for that, keeping that network going and putting together the health source, any of the other program requirements that may come in and out throughout the industry. So with that, I'll pass the mic.
Just a couple of things. One, I just want to reiterate, we're a lot like Mark says they are at Joplin in a much smaller scale. We want to make it easy for our producers. We want to make it easy for them to sell their cattle, to market their cattle, to participate in these programs. We're going to do them right, and we're going to follow all the instructions, but we're going to make it as easy. For example, on our premium sales, you know, the only thing that you've got to do that involves an electronic is put the tag in his ear. You know, I'm going to do the rest of it for you, and I'm going to make sure it's done right because I have to stand behind them. And same thing when we were talking, my little producers, you know, I cannot tell you how many of my producers that said, I'll go out of business when we have to tag these cattle. Well, I don't want you to go out of business. You know, you're what make me have something to do every day. So I'm going to make it, you know, whatever we can do, and that's why we do what we do, is to make it easier. And the last thing is, you know, we don't need to reinvent the wheel in all these programs, and we do need to work together. You know, we don't need to be splintered off in 50 million factions, especially those of us in small producers. There's average herd size in Tennessee is 27 head, not much different in Missouri or all over the South. And Texas even is not a whole lot different. We've got to work together. And when we work together, we see the results. And sometimes, yeah, we have to compromise a little bit. And maybe that color that your favorite is not what seems to be what needs to be done. Or that vaccination program that you like is not what's chosen by the group. But we've got to work together in our area of the country, as small as we are, to get the things done that we want to accomplish.
Well, I think they both pretty well said everything. I tell you, the main thing is to network with the feed companies in your area, the pharmaceutical people. I would encourage you to come by our booth. The guys from MFA are back here in the back, and I work real close with those guys. Come by and see how their if you want to talk about nutrition, how theirs works. Stop by Pfizer's booth, and they sponsor all this. They have a huge select back program. Work with a network of people that can help you. You know, we're all sale barn people. I I am 100% price discovery. I have a lot of customers that do sell them directly in the country, and I understand that. And they feed a lot of those cows. There's a time to feed them and a time not to feed them. But, you know, we're all there to help. We are bonded. The money is always good. And believe me, sometimes it's hard to collect on the other side. You know, you get one of those $300,000 or $400,000, $500,000 hickeys, and it's not very pretty. But, you know, that's why you're bonded. That's why you work with the PNS, you know. I mean, if a person's bad out there, you pretty well know it. But the main thing is look at your genetics, look at what you're raising, make sure what you deliver to the sale barn or ever how you sell it is something you like to receive yourself. You know, I mean, don't sell something that you wouldn't want to take off a truck yourself. You know, give yourself a lot of credit. We've came a long ways in the last 20 years. You know, don't ever give up. You know, you have to stay on the optimistic team. You know, when I tell you, when this corn time, this hay short, it's pretty easy to sit around the house at night and get a little distressed. So when you do that, just call up one of your friends, you know, and just, you know, network with people around you. It'll be all right, believe me. And I want to thank Clay and Renee for putting this on, and we'll all be around the rest of the week. You know, if we can help you, you think something you want to ask us, be sure and talk to us. But we appreciate you coming, and you know, we'll have another good cattle market. It'll just be different.
I wanted to give a big round of applause to all of our speakers tonight. Before everybody heads out, I just wanted to point out a few things. I ask you all to fill out the evaluation forms that you have in your packages. We'd sure appreciate you filling those out and either leaving them on the table or leaving them on the table outside the door. And I do want to point out to everybody that